Hi, I want to share with you a little bit about what we did here at Yavne with our AI chat GPT bot Shabbaton. We had a Shabbos dedicated to the subject. You know, over the last few weeks, there's been AI, artificial intelligence has been here for a long time. In the 19th century, already his sociologists and historians started detecting something called the technium. The technium is a phrase for technology's interest to keep advancing itself further. It doesn't have a mind of its own, but rather what it means is the nature of technology is that it always wants kivyachol as though to progress and move forward. And that will, that impulse, that thrust, that inertia, I should say, the technology has been labeled as the technium. The technium's, it's taken us so many places. The advent of the cell phone, the fax machine, internet, so on and so forth. And here we are, with a few weeks ago, the public was made aware of a certain software that allows you to put certain inputs in and create magnificent works of art, create letters and documents and essays and speeches. And it's exciting, it's amazing, but at the same time, the challenges are tremendous. The challenges really, really are tremendous. And I wanted to spend a Shabbos sort of playing around with this and what we could do with it. So to lead into Shabbos, I used the ChatGPT on a more whimsical level. For example, we curated the Kiddush menu. By going through the Kiddush menu, we typed in, give me a nice meat Kiddush menu for a meat-friendly synagogue. And, it basically matched what we do every Shabbos, except it added two elements, the charcuterie board and a whole plethora of dips and some crackers. So we added that as part of our curated menu. In the bulletin, there were artwork. What I did was I typed in the input, Joseph and his brothers walk into synagogue, with an impressionist style painting, with a postmodern style painting, with a Picasso, a Van Gogh. It produced in seconds pictures and paintings that look authentic and original, but in the style that I prompted them. It's amazing. It's amazing. There was an introductory letter from the AI, from the bot, so to speak, welcoming everybody to this Shabbaton that was created just the same way, by using ChatGPT. So that was sort of, again, a fun, whimsical way of introducing the concept and what it is. I then went into Shabbos, structuring the Shabbos in the following way. Shabbos night, every Shabbos night for the last 2 months, I always switch off, by the way, after every 3 or 4 months, I switch off to another great Talmudic mind or a great scholar of our generation. But previously, I used the Ger Rosh Yeshiva of Shaul Alter. To say a Dvar Torah from that person's name, so we should get familiar to their writings, their thought. Lately, I've been using the Yanuka, Rav Shlomo Yehuda Be'eri, the Sephardic, young Sephardic Gaon in Yerushalayim. Yanuka means the young one. And I wanted to see, I called it Yanuka versus AI, And so Yanuka traces this idea on Vayigash that everything that's happening between Yosef and Yehuda is really going back to a struggle over the location and their space that they occupy within the Beis HaMikdash. He quotes a Midrashim on this, Tehillim. He quotes the Klei Yakar, who explains the Midrashim in that way as well. And what I did was I paused and I said, okay, where would I find the scriptural source, though, for the thesis that the Yanuka was laying out, which is a famous thesis enough, but this, the plethora of Meir Makomos that the Yanuka put together was very impressive, as always. But where do we get such a notion? Where in scripture can we find that? So the first response is, there's no scriptural evidence that Judah accused Joseph of taking the rightful spot in the temple. This may have been an element added to the story by early religious historians or commentators. So that's not the traditional approach. That's not how we see Chazal and what they were doing. So I input the same prompt in the GPT, or I changed it a little bit. I wrote, find me a hint in the Torah where Yehuda accuses Yosef about a Beit HaMikdash. By switching it off Judah and Joseph into Yehuda and Yosef, maybe I could find something more of the traditional focus. And lo and behold, it actually gave me a source. It gave me a pasuk. And the pasuk that it gave me, the pasuk that it quotes is Bracious Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yutes, Lamed Gimel Yutes. So let's read that inside for a moment because it's a fascinating makor that he was bringing down as the scriptural source. So it says over here, Vayiken eschelka sasada, and he, Yaakov, acquired the parcel of land, Asher nata shamolo, where he pitched his tent, Miyad b'nei Chamor, from Chamor Avishrem, for 100 kesita. So we see from here that this is what they were fighting over. How the bot explains, the ChatGPT bot explains, that this suggests that Yosef believed he had to purchase the land from the sons of Hamor rather than get it as a gift from Hashem, as the Bnei Yisrael were entitled to. There was a struggle over how you take ownership. What was this mea kasita and what was bought? Moreover, Yosef, before the brothers killed him, or threw him into the pit, so to speak, before they threw him in the pit, he went to go see them in Shechem. That was the battleground state, exactly according to this pasuk, because it has all the ramifications of the future base of Mikdash and ownership and retention that's related around it. I threw it one more time into the chat GPT, and this shows you the power of what you can do when you take a human interest and match it with the power of what our technology could do. In combination, at least right now at this point in history, you can create magnificent tapestries of ideas. So the ChatGPT says, well, why else? I mean, the question is, do we have any scriptural source that the battle, Yehuda and Yosef were really struggling over the temples? So he says, well, why else would they wait? Why would Yosef need to wait till Binyamin comes to him? Why does he need it like this in order for all of it to come around? Why does he need Binyamin there? And I think what he was getting at, the ChatGPT, it's my interpretation, and even if it's not what he was getting at, I think it prompted at least, or elicited an ability to create a chiddush. And that is, Yosef needed to create the scenario whereby Yehuda and Yosef embrace, show a sign of peace in front of Binyamin and a resolve to work together. Why? Because Binyamin is going to be the one in whose territory is Machna Shechina. No matter in Shiloh, no matter in the Mishkan, Beis HaMikdash, he is where the Shechina is. And that's always going to be taken by the enemy. And that's why Binyamin is crying in the moment when they embrace in Mem Hei Yodalad. He knows it's going to be gone. And the image that Yosef is giving him is that me and your brother Yehuda, we've reconciled. And therefore, we will always stand and defend the Machna Shechina. And one day we will bring it back to you in the future with the Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David. Okay, that's the Yanuka versus the chatbot. The next day, I introduce Aliyahs. I always usually introduce the first Aliyah or second Aliyah and then the fourth Aliyah. So I introduce the Parsha with one of my favorite psukim, Ha'od Avi Chai, right? Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? Classic, legendary pasuk. So the first of our Torah I gave on it was I put a prompt in the chat GPT and I told the congregation this. Give me a Dvar Torah on that pasuk that Rav Kook would say. And then I ran it again. Give me a Dvar Torah that Rav Shach would say. And it was fascinating. I don't know if Rav Kook ever said this, but it was a Rav Kook flavored Dvar Torah. It said that the symbolism of "Is my father alive?" is that entity which helps bring us together, which is the commonality that we have. We share our father's DNA. Is that still alive? Do we still have it here? Can we make this work now? Can we bring it all together? Can we find that unity that's in the sky by God, that's embedded in all of creation, and can we bring it down to our situation? Very Rav Kook. In Rav Shach, he said the following. He said that, is there still a fealty to the Mesorah, Ha'od Avichai? Is my father's minhagim halacha still important to you guys, or did you cast that away as like you cast me away? That's very much Rav Shach, loyalty to the Mesorah, loyalty to tradition, so on and so forth. It's amazing. People were quite impressed. Okay. For my speech during the drasha slot, I wanted to write a speech connecting the elements of the parsha and the power of AI before I got into some of the challenges. So this is what I delivered. I want you to listen carefully, and I'll share with you why, but listen carefully. I said, good morning, good Shabbos, everybody. Today I want to talk to you about the power of forgiveness and how it relates to the rapidly advancing field of artificial intelligence. As many of you know, the story of Joseph in the Bible is one of forgiveness and redemption. Joseph was sold into slavery by his own brothers, yet he ultimately forgave them and reconciled with them. This act of forgiveness not only brought healing and restoration to his own life, but also to the lives of his brothers and the entire family. In the same way, the power of forgiveness can have a transformative effect on the world around us. It could bring healing to relationships, bridge divides, and create a sense of unity and understanding. Now let's consider the potential power of artificial intelligence. AI has the power to transform industries, revolutionize the way we work and live. It has the potential to solve some of the world's most pressing problems, from climate change to healthcare. But with great power comes great responsibility. And as we continue to develop and utilize AI, it's important that we also consider the ethical implications that come up and how to use it to best benefit humanity. This is where the concept of forgiveness comes in. Just as Joseph chose to forgive his brothers and bring reconciliation, we must also choose to use AI in a way that promotes forgiveness, understanding, and reconciliation. That means considering the impact it'll have on different groups of people and being mindful of any potential biases that may exist. So I would say the power of forgiveness, of Yosef forgiving his brothers, is a valuable lesson that can be applied to many areas of our lives, including the development and use of artificial intelligence. And by choosing to use AI in a way that promotes forgiveness and understanding, we could create a brighter and more equitable future. That's the first connection in our parsha to AI. And the Tanya says, just commenting on that first idea, that when we hold on to resentment and refuse to forgive someone who has wronged us, we become trapped in a state of ego and self-absorption. We become consumed with the thoughts of how we've been wronged and how we have suffered. The next idea in our parsha is we have, you know, the Israelites, Bnei Israel, moves to Egypt. So it's possible to draw some comparisons between the story of Bnei Israel moving to Egypt and the development of AI. Both involve the movement of a group of people or ideas to a new location. Both involve the adoption of new technologies and new way of thinking. In the story of Bnei Israel, Yaakov's sons and their families moved to Egypt during a time of famine in their own land. They were welcomed by Paro, the ruler of Egypt, and were allowed to settle in the land of Goshen. And that move allowed the Israelites to survive the famine and thrive in their new environment. Similarly, the development of AI has involved the movement of ideas and technologies from one place to another. Researchers and developers have drawn on a variety of sources, including mathematics, psychology, and computer science, to create intelligent machines that can think and act like humans. These machines have been able to adapt to new environments and perform a variety of tasks, from playing games to driving cars. So both the story of Bnei Israel moving to Egypt and the development of AI involve the adoption of new technologies and new ways of thinking, and both have had a significant impact upon the world. To this end, the Tanya says that when we're closed off to new ideas, we become trapped in a limited perspective and therefore not able to connect to the divine, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One more element of the speech is Yaakov's meeting with Paro is like our encounter with AI. It's possible to draw a comparison between the story of Yaakov's meeting with Paro and our encounter with artificial intelligence. Both involve the encounter of two very different entities. Both have the potential to lead to significant changes and consequences. In the story of Yaakov, Paro is described as a powerful and influential figure who's accustomed to having control and command over his subjects. When Yaakov meets with Paro, he's able to gain his favor and secure a place for his family in the land of Goshen. This meeting leads the Israelites moving to Egypt and establishing themselves in their new home. Similarly, AI is a powerful and influential technology that is rapidly changing the way we live and work. It has the potential to perform a wide range of tasks and make decisions without human intervention. As we encounter AI in our daily lives, it is important to consider the potential consequences of interaction with it and to think carefully about how we want to engage with this technology. Both the story of Jacob's meeting with Pharaoh and our encounter with AI involve the encounter of two very different entities and have the potential to lead to significant changes and consequences. We have to approach these encounters with caution and to consider the potential impacts on our lives and the world around us. Shabbat Shalom. Now that Shabbat Shalom was said with an extra emphasis, I would never usually say it, but it cut off what I was just saying. And the reason I did that was I wanted to stop and illustrate the following. I said everything I just said of the last 4 minutes, 5 minutes, that sermon was created by AI. Not a single word of it was mine. Not a single word of it. Not the Tanya, not any of it. I did not put any of it in there. I gave it some prompts, and that's the sermon it created today. It's incredible. So I that moment I stepped to a different, I moved over to a different side of the Aaron so I could take on a different persona or come back to authentically me. I go, now it's hard for you to understand who is me and who is not me, who's the real me here. But let me talk to you from my heart about this challenge and this opportunity of what this all means for us, of this AI and how it could be harnessed and what are some of the pitfalls. And I thought that the biblical figure of Yosef is the perfect entity to describe what it means to be a stranger in a strange land, new uncharted territory, and to use that opportunity to find solutions. Yosef was always one to say, Biladai, that it is all God. God goes everywhere. He's not small. He doesn't just fit in shul. He doesn't just fit in our traditional spaces. God can be everywhere because he created everything. And therefore, we have to realize that the advent of AI and chatbots and ChatGPT, all of these can be tools in the hands of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that he's giving to us. Kechomer biyad hayotzer. We have the introduction of the Encyclopedia Talmudit. The Encyclopedia Talmudit is a wonderful, and it's 24, 25 volumes now. It's an introduction to concepts in the Talmud and really goes into depth about them. And the editor, Rav Huttner, not the same Rav Huttner from Chaim Berlin Yeshiva, Rav Huttner was worried. People were worried when they came to him that he's going to be taking away the amelus, the effort needed in Torah study, because it's all laid out. And he quoted the Truma Sedeshin, and the Truma Sedeshin says the following. Truma Sedeshin says, in his time, they created a lazy Susan, so you could pass the book from one end of the table to the other. And he was worried, will that take away from the amelus, the work needed? You're supposed to toil in Torah study. He said, anything that's going to free up time so you could now go to a next level of learning, that doesn't take away from amelus, that in fact enhances it. Same here, the Encyclopedia Talmudit. Yes, it may be organizing all the sugyas, so you don't have to do that anymore. Great. But now you're responsible for the next level up of learning. In the same way, the challenges that are being brought to education by ChatGPT and other bots are just challenges. They're not insurmountable hurdles. Yes, may we have to stop giving for homework, write a 5-paragraph essay on? Yeah, those days might in fact be over. I actually tested this out. I wrote a summary of Elie Wiesel's Night. I prompted it while I was literally picking up my son from basketball practice. So it was like a 4-minute wait time while I was waiting for him. I put in the prompt, give me 3 paragraphs on Elie Wiesel's Night, summarizing. 4th paragraph, I wanted to explain the theme and tone of the book. And the 5th paragraph is, tell me how I feel as a religious high school student about the book Night. The whole thing was produced. Literally, this was all done in 4 minutes. All done. The only time taken was me typing in these prompts, not the bot. They were quick. So how is this an opportunity in the classroom? So I did something interesting. I ran Ezekiel 37. That's the Haftarah this past week. I ran Ezekiel 37 through the algorithm, and I said, give me an inspirational idea on Ezekiel 37 in the tone of voice of Tony Robbins. I did it also in the tone of voice of Mahatma Gandhi, and then I did it in the tone of voice of Michael Scott from The Office. It was amazing. It looked I read it. It sounded exactly like they were the ones in fact saying it. Let me give you an example here. Hold on. Okay, here's the Tony Robbins one. Ladies and gentlemen, are you feeling stuck? Are you feeling like you're in a dry, parched land with no hope or revival? Well, I'm here to tell you that there is hope, and it's found in the powerful words of the prophet Ezekiel in chapter 37. Okay, he goes over the chapter, and this is, what does it mean for us today? It means that no matter how hopeless our situation may seem, no matter how dry and lifeless we may feel, God has the power to bring us back to life. He could restore us and make us whole again. So don't give up, my friends. Don't let the dry bones in your life hold you back. Instead, let the living God breathe new life into you. Let his words of hope and revival, so on and so forth. You get the idea. I did also Ta-Nehisi Coates, the great African-American writer, and he talked about embracing the message. The dry bones represent a past history that's been lying dormant and untapped into, which he speaks a lot about, the Black community coming back to their heritage and their roots. And it's amazing. I mean, the Michael Scott one sounded like him when he's trying to be sincere. Now, I know what you're thinking. Michael, what does this have to do with me? Well, let me tell you, this is a story more than just some ancient Israelites. It's about all of us. It's about the times in our lives we feel like we're stuck in a rut. We feel like we have no hope. But here's the thing. God does have a plan for us. And, you know, thank you. And remember, that's what she said. He did one of those at the end. Okay. First point was that now teachers can give the students 5 prompts. This is chapter 37 Ezekiel. This is how A, B, C, D, and E read it based on the algorithm. Compare and contrast them, and then tell me which one of those is rooted more precisely in the text itself. Which one has better scriptural evidence? That's higher level thinking and takes the student to the next level because of AI and its challenges. The opportunities for education are so many. First of all, personalized learning. AI can be used to tailor learning experiences to the individual needs. Programs like IXL are already doing that. Increased efficiency. It can automate certain tasks like grading assignments, providing feedback, which could free up the teachers to focus on more important tasks like interacting with students, schmoozing with them. Enhanced collaboration between students, regardless of the location. Increased engagement through creative, interactive, and immersive learning, and greater flexibility. AI could be used to create learning environments that are more flexible and adaptable to the needs of schedules and students. It can make education more accessible, convenient, ways of diversifying classrooms, and so on and so forth. There was a skewing of information, yeah, as you noticed in my speech that I just gave, the one that was by AI, it quoted the Tanya twice. So it is currently limited, very limited in its textual or its commentary sources for Judaism. And that's because right now the algorithm is picking up from Chabad.org or H.com, and therefore it's going to get the Tanya over and over again. So that's it's a challenge on us. We need to help populate these algorithms in whatever way one does that. I'm not sure yet. Number two, it's like walking into a base medrash. It could be skewed in any direction. If I walk into Panovich, I'm not going to see Rav Cook's farm there. If I walk into Gush, I'm probably not going to see, I'm not going to see, the Divrei Yol of Satmar on the shelves. The base medrash is skewed towards the hashkafa of that place. Why should the internet be no different? The challenge is that it's skewed towards the values of the algorithm. For example, I tried to put against each other two gedolim. I said, who's a greater gadol, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Aaron Cutler? And it said that's an inappropriate question to ask. That's great. It's fabulous that that was the value of the algorithm. But some values might not be in consonance with us. For example, someone I know put in a prompt, what is the capital of Israel? And it said Tel Aviv. So we're going to have to educate the algorithm. The algorithm lets you send back feedback and all of that. But it's going to be, but again, that's like anything else. It's like billboards. It's like walking in a library. The place is going to be biased based on what the person wants to stack it with. And it's our job to filter in and filter out and figure out a way to improve the algorithm and, account for the biases. More importantly here is, the average person could stop and say, okay, fine. It's fun, great, cute. I don't have time for all this. Well, guess what? Here's where it does make a difference in your lives. Everyone works hard, right? They work hard for a living and they work hard for their money, especially some of the well-to-do people in the Jewish community have really put their blood, sweat, and tears into their money and take pride in the tzedakah that they give, as they should. AI can potentially enhance our ability to do acts of kindness in numerous ways. Personalized recommendations. AI could be used to analyze data about individuals, make personalized recommendations for acts of kindness. Increased efficiency. AI could be used to streamline and automate certain aspects of charitable giving, like identifying and targeting specific individuals or groups that need help. It can make sure that we're using resources as efficiently and effectively as possible. Us as the institutions can make sure, how should we invest this in a way that makes most sense? Improve communication between bureaucratic organizations, charitable organizations, volunteers. The possibilities of chesed are tremendous, are so many. And there's so much to learn. There are challenges, yes, but we've always faced challenges. We have a hatacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Torah will survive no matter what. We're not worried about that. But Yosef didn't just survive, he thrived. And that's the question. How do we use what's coming at us to help us thrive? And to help, Lahagdil Torah Yadira, to make Torah, his name, great. The possibilities here are even more than before, than ever before. The last part of Shabbos, afterwards everybody went to the Kiddush. They were very excited about their AI-curated menu. The older people didn't understand. They came over to me like, is this piece of meat made by a computer? Is that what you're saying? No, that's not what you're saying. Okay, so the next idea was I wanted to do at Shalosh Shudas now a sugya. And what that means is you take a Talmudic discussion, higher level Talmudic discussion, and see if the chat bot, if the chat GPT can be helpful in any way. So the topic I wanted to use was the following. There is the question of how Yaakov allowed Yehuda to bring Binyamin in. There was a suffix whether or not, a doubt as to whether or not Binyamin was to die. And the rationale was that give him because he's a suffix, and the people though are all going to for sure die if you don't give it because there's going to be a famine. So the suffix, the vadai will beat the suffix, the definite will beat the suffix. So the question is, how is that? We know it goes against the Yerushalmi and Trumas that if the people come to say to the Bnei Yair, Oshi Yimusru Adam Achad Oshi Argu Kol Bnei, give us one person, we'll kill the whole city. You let them all die and you don't hand over that one person. The reason is to hand over is a kumva ase, it's active. As opposed to if they kill the entire city, it's passive. I cannot actively decide one person's blood is redder than another. I can't do that. So how over here was Binyamin allowed to be given in? So I plugged this question into the chat GPT and it had nothing for me. It's not there yet in terms of the Torah content. Again, like I said before, it needs to be populated. But where I was able to now work around this was I said, wait a second. Does this problem, does this challenge exist on some allegoric parallel in the secular or philosophical world? And yes, of course it does. It's the trolley ethic question of where there's a trolley going down a road and it's going to kill one person, it's going to kill 100, you can move it to the side and it'll kill one. Is that, are you allowed to do that? Right? It's the trolley ethics. So once I frame these questions and challenges on this sugya from the context of the trolley ethics question, then the chat GPT will have what to say. And therefore, that is helpful. You'll get ideas of ways of thinking about the problem. One thing the ChatGPT suggested is, are all the elements of your question consistent in both the location of the question and the source that you're looking at? That's great. It's a great way to analyze any shaila. You take apart and ask yourself whether the metzias of what you're dealing with is the same as the question itself. That's number one. Number two in the trolley questions. So the response was basically that you need to decide and determine what is going to be the basis for your decisions. Is it pragmatic or John Stuart Mill's utilitarian concept that you need to do that which brings about the greatest good? Or is it a more altruistic idea? What is most right and just, the right thing to do? You don't look at the numbers of greater good. That's not your assessment to make. You look at what is more just. By the way, Judaism has a concept of pikuach nefesh, right? You're supposed to live by the mitzvahs. And the question is, why don't I move the missile to kill the thousand missile's coming towards the thousand, let me move it towards the one. Let me actually do that. Why don't we do that? Why don't we say that we do that, based on the concept that it's more utilitarian to have the 1,000 Jews left in the world than that one guy? So I thought about this for a while. I think the approach is the following. Judaism does not emphasize a virtue ethic over a utilitarian ethic. I guess it's agnostic on that question. I'm not even sure yet the answer on it. But Judaism is saying and making a claim to something else, that the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that if you save one soul, it's as though you save the entire world. Okay. If you save the entire world, that means each soul is infinite, right? If you save one person, it's like you save the whole world. That means each soul is infinite. So let me ask you, which one has greater value, the one or the 1,000 people? They're both the same, because infinite plus infinite is still infinite. And therefore, both quantities are the exact same. Therefore, you have to let nature take its course in what it was doing beforehand. Okay, these are great discussions, great prompts. The ChatGPT is not there yet to solve the sugi yet for you or create a chiddush. But it could help your mind begin to think and further think and to probe and to look for parallels in other subjects that may be helpful. It may not be the traditional way to learn, but we're going to find traditional ways to use the algorithm to find Mar Makomos, to find sources we couldn't find. We will certainly get there. These are exciting times. There is so much to do in the realm of AI and these types of subjects. And we're just barely scratching the surface, but hopefully this was informative and gave you something to think about. Happy hunting with the chat GPT. Yishkoach and take care.